But you guys want to talk about, like, it's the Thanksgiving season, and I've been trying to be more grateful, more thankful. It's something I've been, honestly, since I became a teacher, to help with sometimes the stressful teacher times. I tried to focus on gratitude and be thankful and keep gratitude journals and stuff. And so I'm wondering if there's teacher stuff that you guys are thankful for this time of year. Anything you're reflecting on as we get a few days off that you're thankful for as a teacher?
I am grateful for just for the opportunity to have an impact on the lives of students and teachers and parents and just the community as a whole. So this past week, we were able to pull off our big gym grand opening and the initial pep rally. So just seeing how excited everybody was and, you know, how important that is for the entire community. So just being excited and thankful for having those opportunities to make those events happen and to make more of those events happen going forward is a great way to kind of help de-stress, because I don't know, it gives some purpose with all the zaniness of everything. Just kind of being thankful for just the chance to even work on it helps kind of bring the anxiety down just a smidge.
Well, you've been through the ringer, man, getting that gym ready. That's got to be an enormous weight off your shoulders to get that open and celebrate that. That's really meaningful.
It was interesting because it became where I was operating as if we had no gym. So everything was an away game. Everything was away. And then I just forgot that, like, oh yeah, we could actually have like home stuff. Like that would be cool to have a home event. So now going forward, it's like, oh yeah, we could like have things here. So looking forward to that. And, you know, that's another great opportunity to just showcase the very best of our school community.
I just came back from our girls of the social studies department work trip. So it wasn't a work trip. We had like a super fun weekend getaway planned. Like I planned the whole thing basically. Well, yeah, I did. I'm like the planner of the department, you know, like you guys know this, you know, I like to plan things. And so, yeah, we basically planned like a Friday, Saturday night stay. I won't reveal where because we're going again, but we planned a 2-night stay. Like we did like group activities, you know, we gossiped, we had fun, we had a bunch of laughs. Like I honestly was dying like all weekend. Like I was just laughing so hard. So it was such a fun time. So I guess I'm really just grateful for you guys. Like honestly, like the fact that I can go on a girls trip with my coworkers is kind of crazy, right? But that's what I'm thankful for. I'm thankful that I get to, you know, have these cool, awesome relationships with you guys. I mean, I see you guys every day. We still even go hang out sometimes outside of work. So being able to transcend and not just have workplace relationships, but outside of workplace relationship with my coworkers, that's the neatest part of all.
Did you feel when you saw the pictures of the social studies girl trip, did you feel jealous? I don't like what you guys did. It wasn't really my scene, like a wine tasting. I wouldn't feel at home in a wine tasting. I'd feel like a weird alien, but I still like, I felt like a weird, like almost high school clique style jealousy. Like what are they up to? What are they saying? Are they talking about me? Like, I don't know. That brought me to like a primal, like 11th grade state where I felt like deeply left out. And honestly, in 2022, in the age of equity, I think frankly, maybe at least me and Fire should have been invited.
Maybe next year. We'll see. We're actually planning on having like, you know, like a survival competition. So like the men of the department can like compete for a spot on the girls trip. So every year we'll have like a competition and you guys might get a chance to be invited.
Wow. The winner, one of the lucky winners joins. I was trying to imagine what the social studies department like men's trip would be. And I just kept having visions of us huddling around a trash fire, like Escape from New York in like an abandoned rail yard.
Well, everybody, thank you for joining us, the Teach4X Network podcast. With you as always, the Teach4X Network, Eric Johnson, Jessica Warache, and myself, Scott Fireisen. We are Teach4X, the on-demand educator development service focused on community, curriculum, technology, and leadership that we love to go in depth on and explore each of our episodes. So this time we are talking about classroom management. You're going to be thankful for checking into this episode because we're going to be sharing some of our best classroom management strategies, a way to try and organize and manage your instruction each and every day. So what, I don't know, what's the most difficult classroom management issue you've had in your experience?
I think I've actually been pretty fortunate. I don't think I've had like a class that's been completely and utterly disrespectful towards me or like has like tried me. There's been like little instances here and there, but it's never been like, oh, that's like a class that's like the nightmare, right? Like there's, you know, you have those classes some years where it's like that class was a nightmare. Like that was, I could not handle it. You know, I couldn't rein them in. And I feel like I haven't had that yet. I do have my ninth period this year, who's a little rowdy, who like to talk, chit chat a lot, you know, be very high level energy, you know, and at the end of the day, I'm exhausted. So it's kind of very hard to match their energy and just like be the teacher that they need to be at that time of the day. But I don't think I've had anything too disruptive. I don't know about you, Fire.
I've had some terrors, I guess. I guess looking back, it always seems not as bad. But then when you're in the moment, it's like, oh my God, this is so.
Yeah, it's like giving birth. It afterwards, the next year, it does feel better, doesn't it?
Yeah, it's like humorous when you look back. It's like, that was crazy that one time when, and then, but in the moment, it was very stressful and difficult. So Jess, what are some of your Mexican mother secrets that you share with the Teach4X community?
I honestly, I don't even know where this developed when I was like learning the ropes of being a teacher, but I like tapped into my own mother at some point. And I sometimes when I'm teaching, I'm like, that sounded just like my mom. My mom was like very strict Mexican mother. So like, I feel like sometimes I replicate some of her tendencies, you know, when she wanted to get our attention, she would be the loudest person in the room. So I become the loudest person in the room when I need my students' attention. And I tell them sometimes, I look at them, I'm like, I'm really loud and you guys know I'm loud. So the fact that you guys cannot hear me, that's a problem. And they're like, oh yeah, that is a problem. She's right. You know, if we can't hear this lady who's screaming down the hallway, that's a really bad
they're
issue.
Like, yeah, for real, man. She's really loud. Yeah.
I honestly feel bad for like my classroom neighbors sometimes because they're always like, yeah, we can hear you sometimes. And I'm like, I'm sorry. But that was like her thing, you know? Like if she wanted our attention, she was gonna be the center of attention. So I think that's what I do a lot too. Like I become the center of attention. So that way they have nothing else to focus on except the yelling lady in the middle of the room.
You know, if we're tapping into our heritage, I have used the Scandinavian father classroom management skills. My father once, he was frustrated. We were in a long shopping trip in Target. And to display his frustration to my mother and our family, he found a quiet spot in the greeting card aisle and just laid on the floor and stared at the ceiling as if waiting for death. And there's been a few times where in my class, when everything seems to be going wrong, I myself have also just laid on the floor and stared at the ceiling and waited for death. And that does leave a little bit of an impact on the students, mostly because they start laughing at you. But just as you, Jessica, tap into your heritage to manage your classroom, I have done the same. But what else you got, Jess? Because I know it's not just like screaming at kids. You know, you got in the show notes here stuff talking about connecting to students, right? So besides just being loud and you know, getting that attention from students, what do you do? Because I mean, I've watched you teach. Your classes are run well. Kids are tuned in. They're connected to you. So like, how else do you, you know, how would you describe your classroom management beyond the Mexican mom factor?
Well, I guess it also plays into the Mexican mom factor, you know, because my mom was very strict, very like, you know, like ran a tight ship with us, but she was also still very warm and loving. At the end of the day, like that's still my mom. And I know she loves me and I know she wants the best for me. So even though she's like threatening me with a chancla, like she still cares. And I think that that's like how I use that as well. You know, like I connect with them. I like make them know like, yeah, I really do care about you. Like I care that you are going to be in this classroom for the next 9 months. I care that you learn history. I care that you become a better person by the end of this class. I care that you have a great time in this class. I care about you being safe and sound and nothing bad happening to you. And if something does happen, I hope that you would come and tell me and we can try to work through some solutions. So I think that that also plays with the Mexican mother like thing because it just comes out of me. Like I'm very motherly with them. I feel like they have said like I'm like their mom, but I'm young. So like an older sister, I guess, where when it's time to lay down the law, they know I lay down the law, but at the end of the day, they know that I'm doing it for their own good. So I think that connection piece is so important because like, if not, they would just be like, man, this woman's crazy and she doesn't care about us. Like, why are we going to listen to her? But because I'm crazy and because I care about them, they're like, okay, well, this feels familiar.
Yeah. What I think is interesting, I'm kind of reflecting on this and thinking about my classroom management style. And I think Fire and I are maybe closer to one another in terms of how we manage a class than being close to how you manage a class, Jess. Is I feel like if I was loud and intense in the way that you can be in the classroom, I think my students would laugh at me because that's so not me and that's so not how I operate. And not that there's a right or wrong here, but I think this speaks to how important it is to find as a teacher to find your classroom management style and what works for you. Because I think if I came at the kids the way you do, it would just be like a cartoon. I would be laughed out of the classroom, right? Because that's not authentic to my personality. And I think maybe it would be similar to Fire. I think Fire, you employ a more low-key classroom management style as well. Is that right?
I certainly do now.
Now.
I mean, when I was back coaching, when I was Jess's age and I was insane, well, then, you know, then it's a little different. But, you know, that's also important to realize that throughout your career, your classroom management is going to evolve or, you know, change or, you know, you know, it'd be interesting to check back in with Jess 3 years from now and be like, are you still doing the Center for Touching Mexican Mom thing? Or are you like, yeah, I kind of, you know, I was about to have a nervous breakdown one day. And then I realized maybe I got to have a little bit of a different approach. Or maybe you're still doing it. Whatever. It just speaks to you. In your practice, you have to, you know, continue to evolve and continue to find different ways to not only connect with the students and to be a success with your instruction, but to do what's best for you and your mindset and your attitude. And so I would say that was big for me just because I felt I was, you know, when I was coaching and in my younger years, I was much more intense, but then it was like wearing on me and I wasn't enjoying things as much as I should. And then you have much more of a negative attitude and then being intense isn't really fun anymore. Now it's like, yeah. This guy needs to chill out. And then, you know, everything, it kind of goes south from there.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting to dig into because Jess, do you feel like your intensity when you're, you know, hollering at the kids? I mean, is that wearing on you? To me, that just in a way, I almost feel like you're having fun while you're doing that, right? Like it's not necessarily like you're pissed off when you're doing it. It's just kind of your way of communicating and sort of organizing and, you know, demanding that the kids perform in the class.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so. I think like maybe when I have to like more discipline, then I think it becomes a little, because then I'm frustrated and annoyed. I'm like, that I have to like be doing this right now. But I think when it's just like, because it's part of the activity, like, all right, next, like, let's do this next. Like, right. Like we're switching something. Like, I guess the one thing I'm thinking about is like when I do like gallery walks or like presentation type stuff, if I'm really like up there and jumping and like all over the place, it's really fun. It is really fun. And I think just to go back on what you said, Johnson, about the whole personality thing, I think because my personality is just out there and just over the top sometimes and intense, like I think it doesn't feel like work to me because that's how I am, you know, like you guys have seen yourself in even just the like the copy room or outside of the like when we hang out outside of school, you guys know that that's just like, you know what I mean? And I think that that's why, like you said, it's authentic, it works because that is who I am. So I think that that plays a big role in it as well.
Right. You're zesty, whereas I've once been described as a combination of Niles Crane and a wet blanket. So Fire, do you have like cool hacks? Do you have like a cool, you know, I appreciate you sharing about, you know, your classroom vibe. Do you have like a cool classroom management tool or hack or anything that you use that you think is sort of unique to you?
I do. I don't think it's unique to me, but I've been kind of exploring the psychology behind a little bit, and I think that's interesting. And I just use a sign-in sheet for tardy students or students entering classroom after the bell, because there's a principle known as the foot in the door phenomenon, kind of like a sales principle. So if I want to get you to agree to this big task, I don't start with the big task. I start with something small. So right. Like, you know, I get you, hey, can I borrow a pen? And then an hour later, when I ask you to, you know, help me move, you're much more likely to say, yes, you're going to help me move. Because just the psychology of it, once you say yes, once you agree to something small, you're much more likely to agree to something larger. So I do a sign-in sheet. So just anybody who comes to class after the bell, you just got to write down your name and the time you entered and why you were late. And there's times where I'm late and I be sure to write, you know, I'm going to model this for the students. And the kids are like, you're late, Mr. Ralph, sign the sheet. I'm like, okay, yeah. You know, I'm actually working. But, you know, okay, fine. You know, that's fine. When they come in, I just say, could you please sign the sheet? Make sure you sign the sheet. And then, you know, there's always hard cases that like walk right by. And then you pick up the clipboard and bring it over to them. Like, could you just sign this real quick? Just sign. I know. I just need you to sign. You know, I act like it's not even my thing. Like,
yeah, yeah.
I just need you to sign this. You know, if they just make me do this, you got to sign it. And then they scribble something down. And then you just kind of do the same thing later when you give them a handout. Be like, hey, I just need you to, can't you just do number two? You know, we're just working on number two. You could just do that. Like, that's not a big deal. Like, okay, I really scribble. And like before, you know, they're way more compliant than they otherwise would have been. So in some ways it's like another thing, but then there's still plenty of kids who like are lined up at the door ready to sign their thing. They'll ask me what time it is. They're like, what time is it? Is it 1:04 or 1:05? And I'm like, I'm not even gonna look at this later. I don't.
Yeah.
But it just creates, I don't know, it creates some friction, you know, it like keeps people from just walking in and owning the show. Like it just slows the whole thing down.
Yeah.
And makes them a little more willing to go along with the show.
Well, and that, it speaks to the power of routines too. You know, I found my first year teaching, I was not having huge classroom management issues, but I was just kind of feeling listless and lost in how I was running the class as a whole. And, you know, I switched to orienting the week around a daily routine. And each day we had a specific type of activity that we did. You know, Monday was going to be a reading day. Tuesday was, you know, I don't know, a book day. Wednesday was a note day, whatever it was. And so fast that routine gets ingrained in the students, it gets ingrained in you. And any kind of structure that you as a teacher can provide, I think pays out in dividends in reducing your mental overhead and helping the students behave and keeping everybody sane. I think really we're all sort of looking for clear expectations and clear routines. So I think that small thing is such a cool, like it almost like creates a domino effect where all this other stuff is going to fall into place because you've started this small routine, this small habit. You know, if you read Charles Duhigg's Power of Habit, he and other habit guys, I know James Clear has the Atomic Habits book as well. They all talk about how to make meaningful changes in your life or in your business or in whatever work environment. If you start with one small change like that, one small habit, it radiates outward and has really positive impacts on everything as a whole. So that's really cool. You're really tapping into a lot there. I think that's really awesome.
I feel that it makes a difference. I don't know what exactly the data would be, but I mean, I just feel like it's better than the chaos. You know, you got to try and control the chaos. We all know that's part of our job and part of what you have to do within the classroom setting.
Well, and that gets me kind of thinking about one of the keys to how I think about and operate on classroom management. And it goes back to a great professor I had at DePaul University, Dr. Donna Keel. And she had a really long teaching career before she started teaching in teacher school. And she worked in some really tough rural schools. She said the rural schools she taught in were more challenging than any of like the toughest city schools she had ever encountered. And one of the things that she talked about that really stuck with me, and this was a class really early on in my graduate program, was how her entire teaching career, she never once sent a student out of her classroom because she believed if she got to the point where she had to send a kid out, she had lost. And that really stuck with me. And then I carried that into my time here at our school. And I was meeting with one of our colleagues who's now an administrator. And she had given me this tip when I was asking her about classroom management at our school. And I was like, if a kid's going nuts, what do you do? You know, if you're having an issue in class, what do you do? Because when I was in high school, the teacher just had a button. Your teachers have a button where a dean would come. Did you guys have that? Yeah, our teacher had a button. We had like 12 deans and they would press it. And I remember at my school was this big Italian guy, Dean Palumbo, would, you know, materialize from wherever he was. All right. He looked like he had walked off the set of The Sopranos. You know, I'm sure he had a bat in his car. And then he would bring you to, it never happened to me. Okay, because I was a little sweet angel baby, but I would watch these kids get dragged off by Dean Palumbo. Hey, come here. And they'd go in the back of the local deli or whatever. And the kid would come back changed. They'd come back like wild-eyed and just staring into space, you know. And the next day we're reading the Aeneid. The kids got their hand up. I'll read it. So I thought like that was a thing I would have. I thought as a teacher, I would have a button. And our colleague, now an admin, was like, nah, there's no button, man. It's between you and the kids. And between between Dr. Keel talking about how she had never sent a kid out and between this colleague talking about how it really is, it starts with you, man. Like, that's how I frame everything I do in terms of classroom management is when I walk into that classroom, I'm thinking constantly about the rapport that I can build with the students, the respect I can show the students, and the relationships that I can build to, you know, prevent classroom management issues from occurring before they could ever happen, right? And now, obviously, it's not a magic bullet. Rapport building is not going to erase the need for classroom management. That's not possible. But I just find that relationship building, that connection you make with the students, like Jess said, and showing the students that you do love and care for them is so, so significant. And I think if you do that, the amount of cute classroom management strategies that you got to think about drastically is decreased, because you've just built this great relationship and the students want to perform for you. You know, if you can build that relationship, they want to do good by you. So that's how I operate on all levels in terms of classroom management. And it's served me well.
Yeah. And that I think is the most important, like you were saying, is like, they do want that positive attention. And that's what I was telling my student teacher now, is that the kids who are acting out and doing these things that are annoying to us, that are like being very difficult, it's because they want attention. They want our attention. And the moment you stop feeding, I guess, like, I'm thinking it also in terms of how I've been training my cat, like the positive attention, the positive reinforcement, you know, it actually really works. When you stop acknowledging the bad behaviors low key, and you're like, well, I'm not gonna pay attention to you. I'm not gonna give you what you want. And when you do what you want, that's when I'm gonna give you my attention, and that's when I'm gonna be extra hype for you. Then it switches on them. Like, it causes a switch in them. I don't know what it is. I think it is the attention seeking in them, that they are like, I want someone to notice me and pay attention to me, but I'm not gonna pay attention and notice the bad things, but I'll definitely hype up the great things. And that's a great shift in mindset as well.
I can say in 7.5 years of teaching now, I've never raised my voice at a class. I've been upset inside at a class in my little mind, but I've never had to fly off the handle. And to brag a little bit, I had students talking to me last year, and they said, Mr. Johnson, have you ever like yelled at kids? Have you ever like flipped out at kids? And I said, no, not really. And the kid said, and I think speaks to the relationship and the connection that I built with them. The kid said, if you yelled at me, Mr. Johnson, I think I would start crying, you know? So I really, again, for me, it's just all about being authentic and getting to know the students and caring for the students. I'm a teacher because I like working with students. And so I don't know. I think if you can just do that authenticity, that really means a lot to good classroom management.
Absolutely. Great stuff. Great stuff. Well, Jess, if you have any more cat strategies, maybe you could share those. Otherwise, you could close us out if you want to.
All right. So thanks for everybody for listening. Please remember to rate and review us on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. If you would like to get in touch or ask us a question, you can do so via Spotify, or you can also shoot us an email at teach4xcontacts@gmail.com. Thank you, everyone.
All right, everybody. Thank you for joining us. Enjoy your holiday. Happy Thanksgiving. And hope you have a great remainder of your school year. We'll see you soon.
Gobble, gobble. Have you guys heard them say that at Juul? The gobble, gobble people?
No.
I was at Juul once. This was last year. And while I was shopping on the intercom, somebody kept going, gobble, gobble. And I was like, what the hell is going on? And I check out, and I don't know what I was buying. This was like right before Thanksgiving last year. And I'm in line with this, it's like an old lady cashier working. And she's like, I get up to the line and she like leans up to me and she's like, do you want a gobble gobble? And I'm like, what? And she's like, you just gotta donate to a family in need and we could gobble gobble. And I'm like, I mean, I don't think I want to gobble gobble, but I do. You know, it's like a horror movie when you don't, you're not, you know, you shouldn't open the door, but you have to open the door. And so I was like, okay. So I like donated $1 and she's like, thank you. And then she touched my hand and she took the intercom and she just goes, gobble gobble.
What the